Welcome to Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, the thought-provoking series on how to set, align, and implement priorities. Here's the host of our show, management consultant, speaker, educator, and president of Business Alignment Strategies, Pat Lynch.
Welcome. I am Pat Lynch. I have as my guest today Bill Corbett from Corbett Business Consulting. Let's see, Bill has many, many, many titles. The ones that I will mention right now is he's a consultant, a mentor, an entrepreneur, and a business turnaround specialist. Among his other accomplishments and capabilities, he is a catalyst for rapid turnaround and restoration of profit in small to medium-sized businesses. Bill specializes in creating and implementing simple solutions for complex problems. So it sounds like he's exactly the person we need to talk to about setting and aligning priorities. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I appreciate your joining us today. Now, the purpose of these interviews that we're doing is to gain some insights into how to set priorities and really assure that they're aligned with those of the organization and also to implement them. So, Bill, if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself, please, and then we'll get into the questions.
You bet. I'll put these into three areas. I do the business turnarounds, as you described, and then I take successful businesses and take them to the next level. And then the third thing is as a trusted advisor to CEOs and top executives. Some are in these successful companies, and others are executives that have alcohol and drug dependencies, and I work with them also.
Okay. Now,
I'll give you a little background on my work history, if you'd like.
Certainly. I think it's important for people to know why I've asked you to help us determine how do we set priorities here, because I do notice on your website that you talk about the fact that you help business owners turn chaos into order and profits. That's got to involve setting priorities. So do tell us a bit more, please.
You bet. I've worked in all levels of management for medium to large corporations, and then for the past two decades, I was an entrepreneur. I built, ran, and sold businesses. And 4 years ago, I found my niche and connected with my passion by helping other CEOs and businesses do what I did, which was to take a business that I owned that after 15 years, I hated going into work, and I transformed that business into a place I loved going into. And today I still own that business, but someone else runs it for me.
Okay, so it sounds we are in the right place here. Thanks, Bill. Okay, so let's get started. Could you tell us, please, in what types of situations you find yourself setting priorities, and you've described some. What I'd like to know is, how do you set priorities? In other words, what is the process by which you're setting your priorities? And I'm also interested in whether you use any specific tools or methods in doing so.
Okay, thank you. You know, what I thought was intriguing about this is the key to getting from where I was to where I am today was mastering priorities. So it's a great fit. The companies that I get called into a lot are companies that have outgrown their ability to run what they've created, either due to a lack of skills, competencies, or they've created something that's turned from a company they could manage to something that's chaotic. There couldn't be staffing issues, and then they get to the place where it's time to grow to the next level or diversify, either in products or services. They lack the vision, the strategic formulation, and how to execute or implement those changes that they think they want, but they're not sure how to get there. To determine how to set the priorities, what I've found is it seems oversimplistic, but it's so powerful, is behind the chaos, behind the lack of confidence that happens to a lot of business people when they find themselves in situations that they can't figure out, is there is the nuggets that they really do know, and my job is to sit with them and build a trusting relationship and solicit, take them back to the beginning and solicit what their values are, what their vision is, and then we co-create. I'm almost like the ghostwriter. One way of doing that, because you have to get below the layers of all the obstacles that have gotten in the way, is to sit with them and talk about their obstacles, their frustrations, the business frustrations they have, and the lost vision of when they started the company. And by doing that, particularly focusing on their frustrations, we begin to find out what is standing in the way and what's on the other side of that big wall called frustrations. And I not only do that with the CEO and his direct reports or her direct reports, but I also do it with as many staff, a sampling of staff throughout the company, mm-hmm. because everyone has their own story. And I get the only way I'll agree to do this kind of a intervention is to get the word from the CEO that I can, all the conversations I have one-on-one with everyone in the company are totally confidential, and he announces that, I honor that, and then people really open up. We take all of these obstacles and frustrations and put them in a bucket without names on them, and just they almost tell you what the priorities are. For example, if it's cash flow, if it's if there's one or two or six really frustrating people that are not in the right jobs and the job has fully outgrown them or they were put there, it just becomes obvious where we need to go first. I take all of these and prioritize them according to the amount of feedback I get and the impact they'll have on the business, but on achieving the vision, and then get agreement from everyone in the company, but particularly the CEO. Do you agree that, you know, this is the number one example? I'll give you an example. Excuse me. There was a business I went into that was very successful. It was a 30-year-old business, family-owned. They were the leader in their region. They had 9 key people in the marketing sales function. The business had grown so rapidly that they just went out to get the best people they could get. Everything from prior business owners to managers to top salespeople. However, they didn't put a structure in place with something as simple as a common way of doing all the paper flow, all the paperwork. And what I did is that became so obvious immediately after I had talked with everyone, that we made that paper flow sales marketing process the number one priority. Everyone came with great ideas, but they just did it their way. So we had 9 people doing 9 different things, and we took the best of each and then probably did 5 or 6 rewrites of the new process, the new methodology, with them being the authors, not me, until we had total buy-in that, you know, it is steps 1 through 33, and they were the authors. So the commitment was there and the buy-in was there.
You said a number of things that really intrigued me. So if you don't mind, let me just kind of go back and ask you about them. You indicated that, you know, behind the chaos, two of the things that you discover are the values and the vision. Could you say more about the role that values and vision play when you're setting priorities, please?
You bet. There can be confusion on the vision. The key driver there for the company has to be the economic buyer or the CEO. Based on where she wants the business to be and to look like, what really helps drive that is if one of the things I do, if I can say to the CEO, I'm going to work with your staff and all your direct reports, and they're going to get behind whatever it is that we're going to create. Are you willing to get behind them to support them and their business values and their business desires and vision and their personal visions and desires? Which is kind of a leap when I initially introduced that, but if people are willing to spend a third of their life supporting this company, then it seems that the way to really get them excited is to have the company support them in how, you know, in their personal and values and beliefs.
Well, it certainly creates a lot more buy-in, as you say, and I imagine because of that, things happen much more quickly, and they're sustained.
Yes. It feels slow up front. The project I'm on now, the CEO really gets it, and he said that he said I see what you mean now. It has a life of its own. We could charge ahead and make all these changes and put them in place, and then they're going to die. We take the time to build the relationships up front until people really get that we're trustworthy and they're the experts, not me, and that we're going to refine everything that they do and support them in that. And then the enthusiasm gets to a level now where I'm up here 6 days a week because there's so much to do because everyone's excited about doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Something else that you said was when you gave your example, you said, I came in and as the outsider, you know, the problem was immediately visible to me. It was, had to do with the paper flow. Can you speak to that in terms of, you know, setting priorities and inside the organization or having somebody, is it necessary to have somebody come from the outside or can you speak to that for a moment?
I think it's the rare company. It's the rare company that can fix themselves. I think Einstein that said the mind that created the problem is not capable of creating a solution. So I think that, and that's a generalization. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions to that, and actually I was an exception to that, but it was due to, it was either walk away from that company, and I got so overwhelmed by it that I just said I either need to fix this or get rid of it. And that was from an act of desperation. You usually don't have that in the corporate environments I go into. So an outside person can come in at all different levels as just a coach, as a co-creator, be number two, and then as the number one and two plus do the implementation along with the staff. That seems to be the fastest way to get to the other side.
Okay. Now, something else you said takes us to our next question, which is how do you make sure that priorities are aligned with those of the organization or with other departments or those who are affected? And what I heard you say is in the example that you gave is that they had 9 experts, very good people, doing things 9 different ways. So how do you set priorities or how does an organization set priorities and ensure that everyone is aligned with them up and down the organization?
Well, you know, that's a great question because you can have a failure of the project if you're not willing to also make the hard choices. I go in with a very optimistic view that 100% of the people are going to play and be involved. If we do all the honoring up front by listening deeply, by honoring their request and their desire, by communicating what the direction the company's going in, and you're still going to have, probably without exception, you're going to have a few people that won't play. The way I visualize this is we go into a dark room with there's a lot of gray and we turn on all the lights and bring everything into focus, the people that have great intentions and want to be part of the solution love that environment. The folks that have been resistant and have been responsible for the chaos hate that environment because there's no place to hide or play anymore. So generally you have to make a decision to invite them to play, or if they say no, you're very clear and say, look, they'll say, oh, you're going to fire me. Say no. What you're telling me is if you can or won't do this, then you can't. You're telling me you don't want to be here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's amazing how it changes. I hope this doesn't sound too harsh, but how it changes the environment when you take the person that has been the cause of the chaos, and it immediately raises morale and improves the culture. And they really get, the staff really gets that we're committed to this process.
Right. And I think there are a couple of points there. One is that when you set priorities, and especially when you're in a situation of chaos or today, as many organizations find them, and you know, kind of at least disarray because of budget cuts and furloughs and layoffs, and the economy's been on a downturn. It's really important that there be no sacred cows. And
exactly.
I think when you go in and say, okay, everything is on the table, and using your analogy, all the lights are on. We're taking everything out of the corners, putting them down here to see what we have. To me, that establishes a great deal of credibility that management or the business owner is willing to look at everything and willing to consider everything. And secondly, I think the important point is that if you're serious about setting priorities, you do have to remove obstacles. And if those obstacles include people who choose not to change their behaviors.
Exactly. Well said.
That happens. I mean, then they've got to find themselves a different job.
Yes.
And I don't think that's harsh. I think, in fact, that's where many organizations fall down, is they're not willing. They don't have the courage to stand up and say, these are the behaviors that are required. If you choose not to engage in them, you can't be here. Instead they accept them, and then they end up in situations that, among others, might be described as chaotic. So I think that's good. So can you tell us? Well, I think maybe you did, but just how you got these 9 people to coalesce, if you will, or get behind the priority so that everybody's aligned there. Did you find that difficult since they're all experts and they all are probably pretty confident of their abilities?
No, I didn't find it difficult, and I don't think that. I think it's one of my skills, to build relationships. I've spent a lot of years working with recovering alcoholics and addicts, and of all types, and I are one. So that's given me the gift of not letting myself or my ego get in the way, and working with all kinds of people. And I'm very clear with the people that you are the expert. I am not the expert. I don't know this business. You know this business. What I am is I'm a great weaver of the tapestry that all of you provide. And we're not going to just tomorrow put this in place. We're going to construct this thing together. And if it takes 5 or 6 rewrites, every time we do a new draft, then we're going to distribute it and ask for your input. And all 9 of you, and we're just going to keep doing that until we say, oh, that this is the one that will really work. We're going to take all of your best ideas. Some of their ideas, of course, they all agreed on anyway. Maybe the language was a little different, so we agreed to what the language was. And prior to that, of course, it was building a trusting relationship with them and them testing that to see if I was for real. And then just hanging in through that process. And then once they saw the results, they got very excited about it because their name was on that final process. Yeah.
So now what would you say, you touched on this a bit, but I would like you to address it specifically, please, and that is the issue of timing. again, because organizations are faced with, you know, having to regroup and to reform themselves or recreate themselves after, you know, all of these, all the actions taken, you know, like the budget cuts, they're in a hurry. You know, people have lost their jobs or they're going to lose their jobs or they're on furlough and there's a sense of we need to do this, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the process that you're talking about involves getting people to know you and to trust you and building the relationship. So can you speak to that, to the perceived need for speed and the fact that building relationships does take some time?
You bet. But you can do both. For example, once I solicit their obstacles or their frustrations, and I'll say this, I just did this at this project I'm working on now, and I said, okay, now identify a very difficult one that's going to take some time, that's very complex, that we're going to have to reconstruct, and we do that. And then I said, now a quick fix. Tell me something that drives you crazy every day. It's not a big deal, and you think, well, I shouldn't be making a fuss over this, but it drives you crazy every day. It's like having a small stone in your shoe. And it's interesting, once I keep talking to them about that until they get that, then they come up with those little quick fix ones, and then I just fix them. So we sit together and we just get it done. In this company I'm with now, they do a lot of traveling, they do a lot of shows, and the marketing department has this display they set up that's very elaborate, and it was just a mess. It wasn't organized. Things kept breaking, and he said that marketing suitcase, they called it, drives me crazy, and we can't figure out how to blah, blah, blah. And so I just sat with the marketing director, and he and I spent, I think, half a day, and we fixed it. And he got excited, the CEO got excited, because it's the CEO and the marketing director that do all this work. And I just did that with people throughout the organization. It can be as simple as their title being wrong when the phone gets answered by the recording, and they want that fixed. I've got promoted. It sounds like a silly little thing, but I'm showing concern that if it's a big deal to them, it's a big deal to me. Let's fix it. Then they're much more open to moving towards big stuff, and they have more patience in doing that.
That's great. That's great, because it does. I mean, you do have to meet people where they are,
yeah,
and address those issues before they will go with you moving forward. So great. What can you suggest, if at all, and this may not be a fair question, given the kind of the process that you use to help people set priorities, can you suggest some ways that people today might set and align priorities when they have experienced these budget cuts and the furloughs and the layoffs?
You bet. I deal with that a lot, and I think the answers sometimes are more simple than people want to hear. They want some magic bullet, magic pill, or some quick fix, but it needs to be this complex. You know what I'm saying? They want somebody to bring in something from on high. And what I found is the number one thing is to get back to basics. And I'll say, what were you doing before all this craziness hit that really you felt excited about at the end of the day? The other thing is, do not be in denial about the situation. That it is hard. It doesn't make it any better, but it takes away some of the bad feeling to know practically the whole world's in the same situation, and we acknowledge that, but then do not continue to be part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And within companies, within departments, they'll say, what do you mean by that? And I'll say, do not contribute to the negativity, to the gossip. And I've gone as far as, and I'm just doing that here now, to honor the org chart, to when someone comes up to you and starts talking about a third person, and I actually have meetings on this, put up your hand and say, stop. You either need to go talk to them or talk to your supervisor. I'm busy. What are you working on?
Mm-hmm.
And just get back to basics and do what the job is. And then when you discover a problem, take the problem with your suggested solution to whoever you report to. And when people report to you and they bring you problems, I had a meeting yesterday, and there's one person out of the eight that he just wanted to drop hand grenades. And I said, that's great. Thank you for pointing that out. How would you fix that? Well, that's a difficult signal. How would you fix that? I said, you're the CEO, and I need you to tell us how to fix that. We're going to fix it. And I just let the silence rule until he got very uncomfortable. And then he, about two-thirds of the way through the meeting, he shifted, and then he started to bring up a problem and a solution.
So it sounds like part of what you do, first of all, people really do come up with the answers. You are the facilitator. You are the weaver, as you, as the analogy you used earlier went. And it's more a matter of keeping them on track and letting them realize for themselves, essentially, you know, what was it that made us excited about the organization? What is our core mission? You know, what's the vision that made us so excited to come to work here in the first place? And, you know, really gave us the energy to move forward.
Yes, and I to a degree, that's an oversimplistic answer that I gave you, but there's also some things that I'm really good at,
mm-hmm.
skills I bring. There's ones that I don't have that are needed that they don't have in the company, and there's ones that I have, and or they have old beliefs and they don't know a solution. Then it is my responsibility to either have that answer or create that answer. They don't always have the answer, or whatever industry they're in, one of my gifts is that I can go find the heroes in this industry, whatever industry it is, and find out who the top five players are, and I'll go solicit best practices that apply to this situation and bring those in. So there's times when I have to provide something. For example, they were giving huge discounts and scholarships away at this treatment center that I'm working in now, just because people asked. They didn't build value, they just said yes. And the CEO was one of the single biggest offender. I tried to coach them through that. They couldn't do that. That's something I do well. So I took that job over. They transferred those phone calls to me, and I had them sit in the room with me. And this one, the CEO had insisted in the directors' meeting in front of the other five directors that there's no way that this had to be done because he spent 3 hours on the phone with these people. And I said, great. So I just got in the middle of that, and I did the phone call, and it was great. At the end of the call, he just put his head down on the table, and he just started shaking his head, and then when I hung up, he said, I surrender. And so he's out of that loop. He doesn't take those calls anymore because he doesn't know how to say no, and then that allows us to really say yes to the people that truly need help.
Yeah, and what that tells me, Bill, is you know, getting to the point about, you know, how do you help people implement those priorities is you teach them the skills, you model behavior, and if need be, you, you know, rearrange who does what, because if they cannot do something that's critical for the importance and that really is a high priority and they can't handle it, then you either teach them to do it or you find someone who can do it and have them do something else.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important because so often, you know, we set priorities and then we say, okay, And nothing happens because we don't implement.
Yes, and a lot of it's fear-based. People are afraid to hire people better than they are, afraid that's going to threaten their job. And I believe very strongly that the more people you can hire that are better at what you, better than you at what mm-hmm. needs to be accomplished, that allows you to become much more valuable and work in the areas that you are strong.
Right. Okay. Now, how would you know if or how well the priority setting process is working, and how would you know when it's time to either change or maybe otherwise revisit the existing priorities?
As far as the process, if the process is working, one non-tangible way is the level of enthusiasm and participation. You can sense that compliance without commitment thing, but when the people are leading you, then it gets very exciting. I've got two people up here I'm working with now. There's an expedition director. They have an outward bound feature to this program, and I can barely keep up with giving him enough work to do because he's so excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way. The other is what we do is create, let's say the priority is an effective accounts receivable department that hasn't been handled at all very well before, or perhaps not at all. And in these times, that's something that needs to be addressed in most businesses. What we'll do is I'll totally co-create with them the department, even though it didn't exist, and then we'll put the standards in on what's acceptable in aging the accounts receivable, and then quantifiers to see are we going to hit those standards. Then we'll do the implementation. And then we'll start measuring everything. And it's a mantra that I repeat over and over on all my projects, that everything that gets measured gets better. So we have to come up with key indicators. Not me. They come up with key indicators on what's important and tells us that we are achieving this. And then we have those metrics in place.
And that also allows you to tell rather quickly whether your priorities are in the right order, I would imagine.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, let me just ask you, is there anything else about setting or aligning or implementing priorities that you would like to add here?
I'm so glad you asked. One of the things that I've found, no matter what size the company, it's an extension of what we talked about earlier about soliciting. So these folks have agreed to get behind the company and do whatever it takes to make this a successful company. Then the company, in my opinion, should then get behind the staff. That can look like anything. For, let's say there's a young single mom who loves her job, but she can't work those hours. But she's very good at what she does, then the company gets behind her and structures her job so it's a win-win situation. Let's say there's a woman that's a director that wants to be the CEO someday, or she wants to run another division, then the company should honor that, especially when she's behind the company doing a great job, to give her the training, the education, the mentoring that she needs to do that. On a different scale, personal passions, in this place I'm working now, the director of one of the programs, it's a transitional living, 3-month transitional living program, is an amateur actor. He loves theater. And he and I spent some time talking. I said, why don't you bring that into the treatment center? And he said, how am I going to do that? And I went through a treatment center decades ago, and my counselor was a Shakespearean actor, and he had us read plays, and I thought it was silly when they first started, and I fell in love with doing that. There's another guy that he's a director of the main program. He's a triathlete and an ultra marathoner, and we're working on creating a running club. He's going to bring a running club into the company, both for clients and for staff.
Wow.
It's just a way of honoring who we are, and if we can just slow down enough to to build those relationships so you can solicit that information and then honor that person, then the magic happens to me. We're all in alignment, heading in the same direction and feeling empowered and cared for and respected. And yeah.
And isn't that a wonderful environment in which to set priorities?
Oh, it's exciting.
You know, you take care of people and where they are and you honor who they are, and it makes everything so much easier.
One of the things I've added to everyone's job description is, you know, generally you'll have management responsibilities, tactical responsibilities, but I have at the top, I have entrepreneurial responsibilities, and everyone in the company, from the facilities guy that shovels the snow to the CEO, has that as a line item, and they're invited to come up with their great ideas, and their ideas will be honored and will be acknowledged, and we'll figure out a way to work them into what the company is.
Great way to provide voice for your employees, and in so doing, making the organization that much stronger and better.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you, Bill, so much for sharing your expertise with us today. This concludes our conversation with Bill Corbett of Corbett Business Consulting. If you'd like to reach Bill, you may do so by email at bill@corbettbusinessconsulting.com, and it's spelled C-O-R-B-E-T-T. So, again, thank you, Bill. And until next time, get out there and set some priorities.
Thanks, Pat.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, brought to you by Business Alignment Strategies. If you would like to learn how you can ensure that your organization's people, programs, and processes are aligned with its goals, contact us at www.businessalignmentstrategies.com.